Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today is Anchorage physical therapist Valerie Phelps. And today we're going to be discussing physical therapy, what it is, what it can do, what it may not be able to do, but especially how we can use physical therapy as a resource for musculoskeletal pain. You can reach us with your questions and comments at any time during the next hour. In Anchorage, the local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. We have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our relatively new email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. So feel free to give us a call or email your questions or comments. Ms. Phelps is about to complete a Doctor of Science degree in physical therapy at the Texas Tech University, but more importantly, she's certified as a physical therapist with the International Academy of Orthopedic Medicine. She did that in Europe and then thought so much of the program as she actually initiated that aspect of physical therapy and that approach in the United States and started that program here in the United States. And then recently, or not maybe so recently, founded the Advanced Physical Therapy Program here in Anchorage, which now has offices in Fairbanks, Madawaska Valley, and more recently in Soldotna. She's been very busy besides doing those kind of things and has co-authored several textbooks, published articles, and has supported physical therapy research. So she spends a lot of time teaching as well as administrating a very big organization or a growing organization. Valerie, this is the first time I can recall in the 10 years I've been doing this that we've really focused on physical therapy. So first, I want to say thanks for spending the time with us. And now let's try to ferret out a little bit about physical therapy, where it sits in the medical milieu, what it does, what your training is, and so forth.
Well, thank you, Thad. It's a pleasure to be here and to spend this time with you. Physical therapy really is a growing profession, and I think it's becoming a little bit more elevated in terms of respect in the medical community, particularly with our aging population. In today's world, the baby boomers are getting older, and they want to stay just as active as they were when they were young. So it seems like not only with the population growth, but with the age of the population, folks are experiencing more musculoskeletal injuries and wanting them, quote unquote, fixed so that they can keep going. So physical therapy is on the rise in terms of application and also in the terms of specialization. So the group that I work with specializes in orthopedic injuries, a little bit in neurological injuries, but mostly with your basic aches and pains coming from the neck, low back, shoulders, knees, ankles, that kind of thing. And what a physical therapist should be doing in working with a client is really, first of all, looking for the structure that's causing the individual the concern. So in an outpatient physical therapy department, patient comes in and says, my shoulder hurts. And so a physical therapist has the skill base, should have the skill base, to be able to do a clinical testing sequence and determine what is the cause of that pain. In addition, let's say that somebody has a shoulder problem, there are other parts of that, what we call movement chain. So when the shoulder needs to work perfectly, I would also have to have full motion in parts of my back and parts of my neck, and actually even all the way down to my wrist. So the physical therapist is going to find out where your pain is coming from, and then should examine that movement chain for what we call dysfunction. So that's a tight muscle, fascial restrictions, other joints that aren't moving, or even muscles that aren't working very well. And by doing a hands-on approach to stretch out tissue, stretch joints, and also then a movement-based approach to restore motor control of a joint or a region, the physical therapist can effectively help the patient work through that problem.
So physical therapists can also work independently. Obviously, you have an independent office. Sometimes they might be working with an orthopedist or a pain specialist or something.
Right. Physical therapists, I think, work best in a team. Mm-hmm. And whether there's a business relationship or just a respect mm-hmm. in patient care, that teamwork is going to be the most effective for the patient.
Tell me a little bit about training. I want to mention that physical therapists have to be licensed in each state, and there's a national certifying exam, as I understand. But tell us a little bit more about what goes into training, what happens during training to work up towards that license.
Well, right now, the physical therapy education system is nearly complete in having every educational program be what we call an entry-level doctoral degree. So an individual has to have 4 years of university training and mm-hmm. coming out with a Bachelor of Arts or a Bachelor of Science. And then they apply to physical therapy school, which is a 3-year program, the last year usually of which involves intensive internships. And then the individual graduates with a Doctor of Physical Therapy degree.
Is the doctorate is a more recent addition to this? Prior, let's say 10 years ago, physical therapists may not have a doctorate. At least my thought would be it was more of a master's level kind of program.
That's correct. 10 years ago, it was more of a master's level, and probably 10 to 15 years before that, it was a bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. And now, as many, many states have moved towards direct access, mm-hmm. there's a much greater emphasis on screening other pathologies.
And when you say direct access, that means a patient or the public can go directly to a physical therapist for diagnosis as well as treatment.
That's correct.
And that's a different mindset for many physicians in particular. I'm thinking to myself, I've been at this 30 years, so I'm used to making the diagnosis. And not because I feel like I have to do that, but it's important to me that if someone's going to a physical therapist and getting a diagnosis, that it's the right diagnosis. I mean, there's nothing worse than going and getting the wrong diagnosis and get treated for something that maybe it wasn't even a physical therapy approach. So, but what you're saying is that the training is much more sophisticated now, and part of the reasoning behind that training is to allow the public to have access and feel more comfortable about diagnosis. As well as treatment.
Yes, that's right. And I think that certainly with movement in healthcare towards cutting costs and that kind of thing, if somebody has a backache or a shoulder problem, they should be able to go to a physical therapist. Now, the physical therapist should be able to identify, hey, it's not a shoulder problem, it's a heart problem, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and then get that mm-hmm. person off to the right person. Mm-hmm. And I think since I've been up here in the 10 years practicing in close proximity with some pain physicians, it's really great to have a check and balance. And that mm-hmm. word of clinical diagnosis, we are not saying we're diagnosticians per se, but we have to know what we're treating ourselves.
Right. And for those, the public listening, it gets much more complex than maybe it would appear. For example, you might be presenting with shoulder pain when, like you said, you have a heart problem or you have gastroesophageal reflux or your problem is purely psychosocial and not related to any physical disability, and yet you have true physical pain. So things can get complex pretty quickly.
That's right. And in the world of physical therapy, certainly the way that we practice with the International Academy of Orthopedic Medicine paradigm is that every structure, every musculoskeletal structure speaks a language. And when it's injured, when you compress that structure or you stretch that structure, it's going to give you pain, and it may give you pain in a certain place. So when somebody comes in with gastrointestinal reflux, my clinical examination is showing me red flags. Mm-hmm. And that's going to lead me to keep my hands off that person and send them to the right consulting physician.
Remind our listeners, once again, you're listening to Line One. My guest today is physical therapist Valerie Phelps. And we're discussing physical therapy, and we're really, to a large degree, we'll be discussing musculoskeletal pain. But if you've got questions or comments about any aspect of physical therapy, don't hesitate to give us a call. Our local number is 550-8433. 550-8433, our toll-free number 1-888-353-5752, and our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. One thing that may help, you mentioned the word fascia in a minute ago, and it made me think, it's always important to get some definitions. I think most of our listeners are going to know where bones are and where our joints are, and the ligaments hold bones together, and tendons hold muscles to the bones, but what's a fascia, and how does that contribute to this problem? These problems.
Fascia is getting a lot of press in medical literature lately and in research, because now with the ability to see deeper into structures and with some of the new research techniques, they're better able to look at what fascia is in the body. And there are basically two different types of what we call connective tissue. There's a loose connective tissue that's kind of a very watery substance that lies between every cell in the body. And then there's a dense connective tissue, which is like a sheath or a membrane that covers every structure in the body. Okay, so if you think about a muscle is made up of hundreds, if not thousands, of muscle fibers. Well, a fascial membrane surrounds each fiber and then surrounds a group of muscle fibers and then surrounds the muscle. Mm-hmm. And fascia is actually one of the first things that you come into contact with between skin and the underlying structures. Okay. So if you've ever peeled the skin off of a chicken, you're going to see a kind of almost something between a loose and a dense connective tissue. It's a fuzzy mm-hmm. stuff. That's fascia, too.
Okay.
And research has found actually smooth muscle cells in fascia, which means that in and of itself, it's capable of contracting. Mm-hmm. So we used to think of it, we just used to just disregard it, mm-hmm. and now we see, well, hey, fascia can get tight. Mm-hmm. And if it's tight, it may stop lymphatic flow, may mm-hmm. stop transport of nutrients to and from cells, that kind of thing.
Smooth muscle being one of, I think of three kinds of muscle. You got cardiac muscle, mm-hmm. then you got skeletal muscle and smooth muscle. And it might be worth just mentioning skeletal muscle fatigues. It's under voluntary control and is a general rule. And smooth muscle is pretty much, we think, involuntary. We can't will our gallbladder to relax and spill out bile. It does it under some chemical and neurologic impulses, and it doesn't fatigue so that the smooth muscle in your lungs can contract under some noxious stimuli, but it won't fatigue. So those are characteristics. And so smooth muscle being found in fascia was something I wasn't aware of, but is an important observation, as you said. And so fascial injury, fascial problems can contribute to pain, I guess is where we're going with this.
To musculoskeletal pain, mm-hmm. exactly.
We have a couple of questions. There's a couple of callers, and we have a quick email, perhaps. There's an email that says, since we were talking about older people, does your office, does Advanced Physical Therapy accept Medicare patients, and do most physical therapists accept Medicare patients? Let's broaden that question.
Advanced Physical Therapy accepts Medicare patients, and I do believe most physical therapy offices also accept Medicare patients in the state.
Okie doke. Let's take one of our callers. We have one that's been hanging on here about 3 minutes already. John, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Yeah, hey, I got a question. Question is, I just heard some fellow talk about fascia, so I'm guessing it was plantar fasciitis. Is that correct?
Oh, that's that's a good thing to talk about. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I think I have my problem pretty much figured out, and it's going to be something I'm going to have to deal with the rest of my life. But what really bothered me was I started off with a homegrown doctor at a clinic. They moved me on to a professionalist. I went to two other professionalists, doctors, who looked at the problem. And when it was all said and done, I had a selection of, what do you call those things you put in your shoe?
Orthotics.
Orthotics. And it wrapped up almost $2,500 in orthotics before a doctor finally prescribed me something I could buy off the shelf for $5. And it has worked wonders. Now, there's been a lot of expense here to try to not solve the problem, but to alleviate the pain. And now I'm able to run and carry on and take care of this problem. I'll have to baby it, like I said, for the rest of my days. But it's so frustrating to move from doctor to doctor to doctor. And the money is just incredible. So why would a physical therapist be any different? I mean, if you walk into a physical therapy office, I mean, if it's not something physical therapy, they're going to move you on to another doctor, right?
Well, let's see what Valerie had said. Your problem appears to be plantar fasciitis that you're talking about. Is that right?
It's just one of many problems. let's just say, moving from doctor to doctor, why would I go to a physical therapist? And instead of going to the family doctor and say,
right,
okay, family doctor, what's the problem?
Right.
They'll say, okay, I want you to go to the physical therapist.
I got you. Okay.
I'll go to the, okay, go ahead.
Good. Thanks for your call.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, the physical therapist spends a life time career of in my area, which is orthopedics, of studying musculoskeletal problems. Besides screening out when somebody is not a physical therapy client or should be seeing a cardiologist or somebody else rather than me, then I am able to give my full attention to this musculoskeletal problem which you had. And John, I would imagine that when you went to the physician, they probably didn't have an hour to spend with you each time. A physical therapist most often has up to 1 hour to spend with a client, educating, examining, and basically offering conservative care measures, both in the practice as well as for you to do at home, that will help your problem. So if you were to go to an outpatient orthopedic physical therapist, you would have the expert in the field on your musculoskeletal injury.
Yeah, and I think I would answer that in the sense that we've already, Valerie has mentioned already, is that there's just such an explosion in knowledge in medicine that it is difficult for any general physician to be as good as he might like to think he is or would like to want to be. As a pediatrician, I don't see a lot of plantar fasciitis, although as a physician, or as being 63, I've run into plantar fasciitis. I know what plantar fasciitis is, and I know how to research it. But that doesn't necessarily mean I know the best ways to look at it. I may not be as good as a physical therapist at attributing other problems that may have led to it, and be as quick and as fast to the right treatment. So it, in a sense, does complicate the public with multiple different people. And as Valerie and I were talking about before we went on the air, the problem is making this efficient so that we get this communication and know what each other's doing. I didn't even know that most physical therapists are now getting doctorate degrees. You know, so there is that growing problem as well within the medical field, not just on medical physicians. So it can be frustrating at times for somebody. I might see somebody with patellofemoral syndrome, which I see a lot in athletes in pediatrics, and I may be pretty good at the diagnosis. I may not be so good at telling them the right exercises or the right causes or the changes in their footwear that may help them quicker, because that's not where I have as much experience. Does that help?
That's,
you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And I've been a physical therapist for 30 years, so I've spent 30 years following what are the trends in plantar fasciitis and what is the best thing to do today? What is the best thing to do for patellofemoral pain syndrome?
And we may get into some of these in more specific. I think they're wonderful topics to talk about, and they're relatively common, and they do cause a lot of discomfort. But let's take another caller. Arthur, you're on line one.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we sure can.
I discovered through a really positive experience that a lot of musculoskeletal disorders and conditions that used to be treated almost exclusively through surgery are now being successfully treated, and I think surgeons have even come around to it. I know that because I went to a local surgeon who specializes in shoulders a few years ago, a wonderful man here in town, and he said that a few years ago, the frozen shoulder condition that I had, which was really bad and really painful and debilitating, he said that I would just, you know, schedule a surgery. And that's what we did. He said, now I first send people to physical therapy. And he said, the fact of the matter is, in spite of his original skepticism, he finds that physical therapy is at least as successful as his previous surgical methods were for treating that. When I got an almost identical condition in my ankle, I went to another surgeon who was an ankle specialist who said my body is shooting lots of calcium and bone spurs into the ankle in an attempt to fuse that joint, and that ultimately it's going to take surgery to fuse it. He said that's really the only long-term treatment. So in the meantime, I'm taking cortisone shots and other things because he said, you know, you want to wait till the very last minute to do that. My question is, but he's never mentioned physical therapy as a possible alternative or even a, you know, so I'm just wondering, in your experience, do ankles that are trying to be fused by the body's own natural processes, are they, would I be a candidate for physical therapy? Because this idea that there's absolutely nothing that can be done until you take the ultimate and life-changing step of fusing intentionally a joint in the body.
Right.
Well, Arthur, I think that, first of all, prior to surgery of a musculoskeletal problem, it's always worth it to try, let's say, up to a 6-week conservative treatment regime. And although physical therapy is not going to stop the bone spurs from that particular joint in your ankle, the reason why that joint is painful, obviously, is because it's taking on the loads that you put on day to day. And there are other joints in the foot and ankle sometimes that have stiffened through the years that are equally capable of taking that load if they could only move better. So a physical therapist would be able to go all up and down your movement chain, being big toe to your hip, to look for areas that could be optimized in terms of giving you mobility. And if mobility could then be gained from those joints, your most painful fusing, auto-fusing joint may just be able to take a rest and not be as painful, and you could live with that condition better.
Okay, well, that's really helpful. That gives me encouragement to explore that. But the corollary question to all that is, how does one, in the absence of really knowing the physical therapist who worked this miracle on my frozen shoulder, I'm not able to locate any longer. No longer works for the same physical therapy, you know, collective or clinic or whatever, and I haven't been able to find him. So how does one locate as close as possible to the top tier of practitioners in your field in a city?
Well, I think you certainly, word of mouth is a good way to go. Searching the internet can be very helpful. Most good physical therapy clinics have good websites. I think that the word that you're looking for in terms of what you want in a physical therapist is going to be somebody who practices manual therapy. You want to be touched. You want soft tissue tightness worked out. You want joints mobilized, and you want to be well educated on your condition and what you can do about it. So, and there's also no reason why you can't make a few phone calls and do a little visit to see if the place that you're considering is worthy for you to visit.
Okay. Thanks. You've been really helpful. Appreciate
you're
it.
Welcome. Good luck. Mm-hmm.
So, again, just to expand on this, I would also have to agree. It just makes sense if we're, the surgeon that gave Arthur the advice on the ankle to wait as long as he could, that makes sense. But that surgeon may or may not be aware, as the prior surgeon, about the frozen shoulder of the advantages. And we don't know what the diagnosis is here. That's the other problem. And so there can be problems that physical therapy can't alleviate.
Absolutely.
And so we don't want to oversell. But we also want, I would like to make sure that we understand that there's an ongoing understanding, even within the medical profession and physical therapists, about how to best work with each other and what each other's talents and skills are, which is an unfortunate part of the way things are right now.
Right. And physical therapy really should be looked at as not alternative care,
right,
but as complementary care.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, there's no question in myself, I'm using more and more physical therapy in my own office than I did before. And again, it's just because I don't have the amount of knowledge that's necessary for some of these problems. I may make the diagnosis, but I don't have the right answer for therapy as much sometimes as I'd like. That's
right.
One of the reasons.
Exactly. And we've learned a lot as a profession in the orthopedic realm. Mm-hmm. Having that subspecialty of being a manual therapist then allows you to really affect change to muscle and joints without hurting somebody. That's really important. And when we do send somebody off to surgery, that usually will have a much better success rate, because the neighboring joints that may have stiffened and caused too much load for the painful joint are now moving freely. And so that surgical area will have a much better chance of healing.
Gary, you're on line one.
Yeah, good afternoon. I've got two quick questions, one involving my shoulders and one involving a ruptured disc. I've had a problem with my shoulders forever. I'm 67, and they did a surgery on my left shoulder, which involved infections and ended up having four surgeries. Shoulders give me a lot of pain, and I spoke to the doctor about trying to get shots. They gave me shots, didn't help. So I was wondering if physical therapy could do anything because of the pain. And now if I stretch it or something, it hurts, the pain. I'm worried that possibly the pain would indicate I'm doing damage to the shoulder. My right shoulder, they said the only thing they really could do would be to replace the shoulder joint.
Right.
And they said my left shoulder is worse than my right, but my right one hurts.
Okay.
And the second one about my ruptured disc, I'm worried about surgery because of the infection thing. And I don't know what kind of, particularly in the morning, I have pain with my lower back. I don't know if physical therapy can do anything for that, too.
Okay. All right. I'll see what Valerie has to say.
Well, physical therapy is the human body. When there is an injury, the injury at best repairs itself. And so physical therapy in many, many cases can help to optimize the repair process. Now, when you've had an infection, there is a lot of scar tissue that gets laid down and can be painful in and of itself. So by asking if physical therapy can help, if you mean alleviate all of your pain, probably not, just because of the depth of the injury or the depth of what you've sustained in terms of infections and it sounds like degeneration, that kind of thing. But
I misled you. I don't mean to interrupt.
Okay, it's okay.
My left shoulder, they had the surgery. Uh-huh. I don't have any pain.
Ah.
My right shoulder, they said they have to replace it. And I don't want it because of the possibility of infection.
Yeah, you had such a bad situation last time, yeah.
Yes, sir.
I got you.
Yeah. Well, you absolutely do your best to optimize what you've got. We've had patients with complete rotator cuff tears who were told the only thing you could do was have surgery. And like I said before, at the least try 6 weeks of conservative care. Then you'll know whether it's going to help or not.
Okay. And the ruptured discs?
Ruptured discs will repair. Not beautifully sometimes, but they do go through a process of repair, and the segment is capable of adapting, kind of stiffening and taking care of itself. So there is actually a lot that can be done for disc degeneration in the back and the neck conservatively.
Before surgery.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you've helped me, and thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Good luck, Gary.
Thanks.
We're about halfway through the program already. We do have another caller. I'm going to go ahead and I think take that caller, and then we'll take our break. This has been a very fast 30 minutes, even for me. Beverly, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Oh, hi. Thanks. Very quickly, I want to say, Valerie, yes, I'm one of those baby boomers who wants to do everything. And my problems have been progressing, of course. And I think they're musculoskeletal, and shoulder tear, frozen shoulder, knee meniscus tear, Baker's cyst, pain in my right. All of these are under my right side, and I've yet to find a physician or any healthcare person who will look at the relatedness of all this stuff.
If it's related, yeah.
Yeah,
it's reasonable to think if it's all on one side that it might be, but yep.
Yeah, and I think certainly now that we are working with more and more baby boomers in the clinic, we also see that strains association, that so often somebody has all of these aches and pains are all on one side. And what likely happens is about the age of 35, depending on how we age, how stiff we get, what our tissue is like, we lose that ability to adapt. And so you see in youngsters, when something gets injured, they may end up with a shortened limb or even if it's very minor, a tight muscle, something like that. But then their body will adapt to that by virtue of soft tissue changes elsewhere. Well, in adults, in the baby boomer population, middle age, we tend to see that all of a sudden, what you could get away with in your youth in terms of adaptation is no longer tolerating those loads. And so, yes, at times it is important sometimes for people such as you to have a very close look, closer than normal, at your alignment, both in standing and sitting and lying down, to see how your body is adapting when you move. And sometimes a very small lift or a little brace around a joint that may be moving too much, or mobilization of a joint that's not moving enough, can actually sort of unlock that whole chain and help address all of the problems on that one side.
You know, I have to say that what you're saying is exactly how I've been feeling, yet I could not get anyone to look at the whole body and my alignment. I pretty much self-diagnosed maybe a leg length discrepancy, this and that, but I really feel like I need some professionals, so I would love to come in your office and have a diagnosis.
Well, great. We'd be happy to see you.
There's links to advanced physical therapy on the KSKA website.
Great. Thank you so much, both of you.
All right. Thanks for your call. All right. We need to take a traditional break here. I want to remind everybody they're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. Our local number is 550-8433. Our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll continue to take calls and emails as we talk with Anchorage physical therapist Valerie Phelps about musculoskeletal pain. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection, and I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
KSKA is listener-supported radio. Hello, I'm Steve Heimel, host of Talk of Alaska, and we're inviting you to call right now, 550-8484, and pledge your financial support to keep local and statewide news and information programs going strong on FM 91.1. Toll free, the number is 800-478-5256. 91.1 FM is where to tune for local, statewide, and national news and information. Each Monday, you tune into your health with KSKA's locally produced program, Line 1, Your Health Connection, with Dr. Thad Woodard. The call-in invites you to talk to experts in the health field on issues that affect your health and your family's well-being. Dr. Woodard keeps you connected with your community and offers insight and information on issues that matter to you. Call in with your pledge of support, 550-8484 or 800-478-5256. KSKA, the Alaska Public Radio Network, NPR, and the BBC all work together to provide the best news and information public service on radio today. You rely on the Alaska Public Radio Network, and KSKA relies on you and your financial support to keep this public service healthy and vital. In Anchorage, call 550-8484, toll-free 800-478-5256. Thanks for listening, and thank you for supporting KSKA Anchorage.
All right, welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection. Just a reminder, I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Our guest today is Anchorage Physical Therapy therapist Valerie Phelps. I keep wanting to speak too fast because we got too much going on today. Our topic is physical therapy, but particularly musculoskeletal pain and physical therapy approaches and benefits for that problem. Our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org and our local number 550-8433. We do have a toll-free number also, 1-888-353-5752. And another important message, just remember, if you're listening between 7 and 8 on Monday night, you're listening to a recorded broadcast, and we won't be able to take your calls or emails. So this is the time, the next 30 minutes or so, if you've got questions or comments. Once again, we have a couple of phone calls waiting and an email. But before we go, I would to those questions, let me ask another issue, which I think is important. And that's the public may also want and need to understand the distinction between other manipulative-like therapists, such as a doctor of osteopathy or chiropractic care. Would you mind just commenting on what the differences are here?
I'd be happy to. Like physical therapy, chiropractic care is a hands-on, non-medication approach. And where physical therapists tend to have, of course, in my opinion, the most integrated approach involving both hands-on as well as skills, training, movement, education of the client, I think that chiropractic tends to mostly focus on spinal manipulation. Chiropractic care also utilizes massage therapy very often because they understand that need for both soft tissue and joint to address both areas in treating clients with musculoskeletal problems. Physical therapist then goes that extra step of restoring skills that have been lost due to an injury. So with every injury, automatic movement patterns are lost, and physical therapists are really experts at restoring that skill base. And then on top of that, working with clients with coordination, balance, training, that kind of thing, to get back into the activities that they want to do. Chiropractic training is also a six-year program, and folks graduate with a Doctor of Chiropractic degree. Now, an osteopath, they actually practice the entire scope of modern medicine. They can choose any specialty. They can prescribe drugs, perform surgeries. So that really is a medical degree, much like a physician, and or if they choose to go into surgery. But the outlook towards the patient does tend to have more of a holistic approach. And in so doing, many osteopaths also do spinal manipulations for patient care.
Thanks very much for that. Let's take a couple of phone calls. Nancy, you're our first one this afternoon on the second half of the show. What can we do for you?
Yes, I wanted to ask Valerie if she's heard of active release technique and if it's a legitimate treatment, what she thinks of it.
Active release technique is a great treatment, and I think that many folks benefit from that. So it's great. I think in the care of a musculoskeletal injury, the more well-rounded the approach is, the better. So if let's just go back to that shoulder. If somebody has a shoulder problem and they're only getting active release, a facet of the treatment might be missing, such as joint mobilization or activation of certain muscles that will help the shoulder function better. But in and of itself, it's a great technique.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Mm-hmm.
Denise, what can we do for you?
Oh, good afternoon. I had an experience with a bulging disc last spring. I missed the last 3 weeks of school. It was the most painful thing I've ever experienced in my life. It pinched to nerve 7. I had no strength in my left arm. It was horrific. The worst part is I changed my doctor over it. She did not diagnose what was wrong for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I couldn't get any pain pills. And long story short, MRI, chiros, 4 doctors, you name it. I was just shy of going to acupuncture when I finally saw a physical therapist who I actually started studying on the Alexander technique. I don't know if you mentioned that earlier, but it does have muscle release in it also. But it has changed my life. I work every single day on changing my posture, changing my habits, and undoing all the effects that led to this 2 months of losing my life. So I was so grateful to the PT who helped me. She was just awesome.
It's great news. Thank you.
If you have any comments on the Alexander technique, I'd be really interested in hearing them. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for calling.
Now, as I recall, the Alexander technique is kind of a positioning movement form of treatment. And as with every patient condition, patient selection, who's indicated for which technique, and timing are what it's all about. So the Alexander technique, movement and posture, worked for you. I think that's just great.
So I guess in a sense what we're saying is that in any individual, where we all get caught as humans is, if our neighbor got better with what seems like the same thing, then it must work for us. And often we're not talking about we're talking about apples and oranges. We're talking about different people. We're talking about different ages, different causes. So it is important to realize that the success of one technique, one anything for anybody, is not the best proof that that's the right thing. That's where we need, I'm going to say, the proponent of science, where we need some pretty good studies where we're looking at multiple people that are as identical as we can to see which one of these therapies have the best outcome. Is that worth talking about at this segment?
That is. And I think that certainly in today's conservative musculoskeletal world, the research is vast. Now, 20 years ago, we really were scratching the walls to get research in terms of clinical testing and treatment. Now we're practically drowning in the research. I have a PubMed search under shoulder, 1979, 7,000 articles come up. 2010, 40,000 articles come up. Mm-hmm. So for the clinician, reading research is important, and being able to put it together into clinical use is also very important.
Yeah. There's a lot of articles. It doesn't mean all of them are of good high quality either.
That's right. That's right.
Part of being a good physician or a clinician, let's put it that way, is understanding how to look at an article to see if it has much validity. There is not always a lot of validity in every article, unfortunately.
That's really true. And we must realize that that research is always going to follow clinical observation.
Right.
So what people are doing out there, if it works, there's a good reason for it. Finding out what works for which person when, that's actually the art of the practice.
A quick email question. A friend of mine outside, I'm meaning outside of Alaska, has excellent results with post-knee surgery rehab using a warm water pool. Is there aquatic PT in Anchorage and where?
Oh, gosh. That I don't know.
My general feeling is that, and you straighten me out, is that using water or doing some physical therapy within water where there's not weight bearing is maybe a good initial approach to some of these post-operative things. But that's a non-physical therapist. Am I right about saying that?
No, that's true. And there are some clinics in town that actually go to pools and work with clients in pools. What the water does is twofold. It actually activates the lymphatic system, which is very important for healing. And then, of course, it allows you to exercise without your full body weight. At some point, you need to get on land. And so there are systems that can be utilized that actually gradually unload you. Those are called unweighting systems. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, pool therapy, historically, very, very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We don't know of any particular one in town that's going to use physical therapy, particularly with post-operative knee care.
Offhand, I don't have that information.
Okay. All right. Tony, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. It's great to talk to a physical therapist named Valerie, since my sister's a physical therapist named Valerie. I was curious about physical therapy in relation to exercise physiology. Do they work together? Do they just take different approaches to the same thing? Can you speak to that at all?
Well, I think that the best physical therapy clinic would employ both an exercise physiologist and a massage therapist in order to get a really well-rounded team in terms of what the human being needs to get better from a physical condition. And that exercise physiologist should be even more specialized in movement and restoring mobility and restoring the individual to the level that they want to be in order to do the many activities that they want to do. And if they can work with a physical therapist, I think that that's really optimal. So whereas an exercise physiologist is super specialized in movement and exercise, the physical therapist has also an idea about the myofascial system, the joint system, the clinical diagnosis as to what's wrong, and specific manual therapy techniques, skills training, and that kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah, I just found some benefit recently with working with exercise physiologists, and I wasn't aware that there was even that field before, and I'm finding a lot of great benefit from that. Before, I've always worked with physical therapists, and you know, it helps, but it just seems like the exercise physiology is giving me more than I ever realized would be there before.
It's good to hear.
Yes, and that's a very, very important part of the healing process is movement.
Right. Well, I appreciate you taking my call.
Thanks for your call. All right, here's another email. Valerie, it says, is trigger point therapy part of physical therapy or is it outside of physical therapy? So let's just, usually I think of the question about trigger points as related to something like fibromyalgia, and I don't know if you want to go that broad into this or just answer that question particularly, but let's talk about what trigger points are, or what they're meant to be, and is that something that physical therapists use?
Trigger points are actually one of the most common manifestations of muscle pain that's not a strain, for instance. And research has been really prolific on trigger points. So if somebody has an injury, or I won't even say an injury, if somebody has pain, basically in any joint complex in the body, they will likely have trigger points in the muscles, which are painful fibrous bands. There is a neurophysiological origin to the problem. And those painful bands that can make you jump need to be worked out. There are many, many body workers who I call body workers that work on trigger points. Mm-hmm. Massage therapists, acupuncturists can be working on trigger points. chiropractors, and also physical therapists. I think anybody who has a musculoskeletal clientele should be looking for and treating trigger points. As a matter of fact, shoulder impingements, tennis elbows, whiplash, people suffering with those conditions all likely have multiple trigger points that have to be addressed. And one of the very interesting things that's come out of recent research is that if you have trigger points on one side, you very, very likely have trigger points on the other side too.
And define trigger points then.
A trigger point is a fibrous band that's usually about mid-muscle belly, and it has a center to it that is exquisitely painful. And what's called an active trigger point can actually give you spontaneous pain. So you can just be sitting there and bam, it's painful. The other thing that it can do is refer pain. So people with tension-type headaches, for instance, have multiple trigger points that maybe are in, let's say, the upper trapezius region, the muscles at the front of the neck, sternocleidomastoid, around the shoulder area, and that can actually cause retroorbital pain, ear pain, head pain, even migraine-type sensations.
Without necessarily being consciously stimulated.
That's correct.
Okay. Okey-doke. Ted, you're on line one.
Thank you, and good afternoon. I have recently been diagnosed with what is being called severe carpal tunnel syndrome, and I had a nerve conduction test. The numbers apparently were quite bad. The doctor that did the nerve conduction test also referred to it as severe carpal tunnel. The orthopedic physician that I've been speaking to has indicated the opinion that the only viable option that I have is to have a carpal ligament release surgery done. Under those circumstances, would you still think that a course of physical therapy might be helpful? The physician has told me that this is one of these kinds of situations that delay causes the problem to become worse and could ultimately result in permanent nerve damage. And I have a different question to ask you after you responded to that.
Well, if the studies are actually showing nerve damage, then it is quite important that you unload that nerve and have surgery. That would be my opinion. Nerves are a very, very unforgiving structure in the body. And when they have been compressed or are being compressed, you do need to take that compression away, particularly in the carpal tunnel region where the borders of the tunnel are hard structures, not like a disc in the neck or the low back that can bulge and then retract. Nothing really in the carpal tunnel region is going to be able to pull back and retract.
So the symptoms in carpal tunnel are often related to impingement or injury to the nerve.
In a very narrow, bony space.
And so what the surgeon, I think, again, I'm a pediatrician, but is telling you is you're having the risk of continuing not doing anything is to risk permanent damage. And so that physical therapy may not be the right approach here at this particular time because of that reason. However, if I can extend this and ask another question, there may be things to do to keep this kind of problem from happening again, which might be another a different reason to see a physical therapist. Now, Valerie, am I going too far here, or is that right?
No, really, the next step is to I would probably say have the surgery if the nerve is being compressed, but then in 30% of carpal tunnel cases, there is actually a very, very mild impingement of the nerve elsewhere, either coming from the thoracic, what we call the thoracic outlet region, or somewhere in the forearm or arm. So having the surgery to release the major region of pressure and then following up with physical therapy to make sure that all the other pathways that the nerve runs in are open and supple, that's going to really make for a successful outcome.
Right, Ted, you said you had another question?
Thanks. Yes, that was great. My second question, rather unrelated, is I thought I heard earlier in the broadcast the notion that patients are increasingly coming directly to physical therapists. I have been one of the folks who has always believed that you needed a physician referral into physical therapy, or and that it might even be necessary for insurance purposes. Can you comment on that at all?
Well, Ted, in this state, direct access is a viable option. So technically, yes, you can go into any physical therapy office. However, unfortunately, insurance companies will take a stance on whether they will pay for that visit or not. There are insurances out there that welcome the direct access, and there are insurances out there that say, no, you have to have a prescription. And so it certainly would be in your best interest to find out what your insurance coverage entails.
Great answers. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for your call. We only have about a couple of minutes left, and I'd like to leave that last couple of minutes to Valerie. Often let you go over again the important aspects of this program today. What do you want people to make sure they've heard and remember?
Gosh, and you're only going to give me 3 minutes to say that.
No, two.
First of all, I would say believe in the ability of the body to heal.
Okay.
Trust that there is an answer for you, and very often in a very conservative way. Treatment often needs to be applied simultaneously. So seeing somebody who can help you with both joint as well as muscle as well as fascia, kind of that whole well-rounded approach to taking care of your body is very, very important. And then you too have a big role to play in your general health and well-being, and getting your sleep, nutrition, hydration, controlling stress, and gentle exercise are all really, really important keys to health of the musculoskeletal system.
All right, so we've got about 40 seconds left, and what I'm also hearing you say is that, like any medical professional, we also have to have some cooperation with for the patient to follow through on the recommendations, which sometimes requires, I hate to say it, a little work.
That's right. It's a team effort here.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks very much for taking the time today. It's been very, very enlightening for me. I think it's really important that I perhaps do this again with physical therapy, because I think there is this unfortunate gap also within the medical community in understanding what we're each about and how we can each help each other.
My pleasure.
Line one is going to take a week off next week, and then we will be back in town. We're going to be talking with some physicians from the Providence Imaging Center. We're not entirely sure whether we're talking about breast cancer or some other issue similar to that, but we want you to feel free to join us at that time. And if you also would like to continue to today's conversation, you should feel free to join KSK on Facebook, and you can find those links on alaskapublic.org. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for all of you who are listening, and especially to those who took the time to call and email. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1, Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.